You said.
Blog Talk Radio.
You said one me, you looked at me. Threw your up in the air and you crazy. 5 days, you tackled me. I still got the reference, I'm so funny. Been 3 days in the afternoon. You realize it's not my fault, but I'm too soon. Say you've forgiven me. And now I'm back and wait till you say you're sorry.
Silence of the Damned, here at Somatime, where archivers speak no evil.
Mm-hmm.
Joined by my amiable host, Professor Val,
okay.
Up in Happy Valley, up there, as we get into the meat and potatoes, literally, of the holiday season. Got that Christmas spirit yet there?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
can't frickin' wait.
Me and Wu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these two.
I'm not even going to go there. I will play that whole thing and sing along with it.
That's okay.
That's my Christmas carol this year.
If you haven't thrown a shoe at someone in your life this week, I guess you're out of step. Seems to be all the rage.
Mm-hmm.
People are throwing shoes at everybody.
Well,
I think it's perfect.
Served the purpose.
We're in full meltdown. The society has we've now gotten to the point of mass tantrum.
Did you see the link that I sent you?
No.
You should take a look at that.
I'll take a look at that while we got a whole thing about the
things that should have been thrown that weren't.
I see.
Mhm.
Well, if you're archiving the show, and you're listening in, it's sexhealthguru.com is the name of the site?
No, well, that's something else I was sending you. No, I sent it to your email.
Oh, this isn't the site you want me to look at now?
No. But that's a nice, clean site there.
Oh, well, anyway, we just gave them a plug. So what's the site you're sending me to?
Let me see if I can find it.
What, the San Francisco Gate article?
Yeah, hold on.
Love
yeah,
this?
It's an article.
Oh. Hey.
See, nice sight.
Sex. What are men and women really looking for? Here is some expert insight.
All right. I can't handle any more knowledge right now.
No.
But, sexhealthguru.com looks like a nice, fun time over there. Nice picture of a man with a big boob in his mouth. You can't beat that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that shoes throwing at world leaders... Right behind it, man with a big boob in his mouth. Can't beat it.
No, you can't.
Number again is 646-478-4847. Be the first caller of December and shock us right out of our own lethargy.
Mm-hmm.
As we take on tonight one of the bigger fish in the allopathic alphabet, the capital E, capital D, erectile dysfunction. You know, I in preparing for the show, there's a lot of material, so to speak, about this topic, which, up until when was it just plain old impotence? Probably last maybe 5-10 years?
Yeah, probably.
All the drugs came out.
Uh-huh.
And before that, there was always your himbe. There was always your himbe for you.
Uh-huh.
And all the other herbs from other cultures who... didn't quite pathologize this condition as much as we did here in the West.
Yep.
I think it's very descriptive, because impotence sounds permanent and also sounds kind of critical. But erectile dysfunction sounds correctable and sort of like the horizontal hold is off or something.
Right. Yeah. Well, it kind of is.
Yes, it is. There you go. Hey. Give her a beer. Wow.
Oof.
From the depths of despair, a zinger. That's right.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today.
Yep. You could stop right there. 9:04. Show's over for Val. He's done. So anyway... as we take our cue from the shoe, and focus on the other head, because this is one of those things where the very topic of it, I mean, it's almost like when they used to have all those, funniest home video shows on TV. And the funniest moments, of course, is when little Johnny takes the wiffle ball bat and nails Dad in the nads. Isn't that how, a laugh riot?
See, I don't get those shows at all. They're usually so friggin' stupid.
Well, because they're funny. In a very kind of, like universal way. Because if it isn't your nads, pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's the same thing with erectile dysfunction. If it isn't your nads, you can joke about it. But most guys that I know about cannot handle a paper cut. Much less that. So, and this is one of those things, just like the prostate stuff, just like the colon cancer stuff, just like anything to do with anything that happens below the belt in a man, it's not discussed until there's a crisis. Even shooting blanks, infertility, it's always the woman that's tested and probed and prodded, and her eggs
that's
are looked at
right.
under a microscope. And then the guy goes in the room with the, the magazine of his choice, and they go, your boys aren't swimming here. And
wouldn't you think they'd do that first just because it's not invasive?
Well,
that can be enjoyable at the same time.
I think we could have a whole, basically a combined two industries there.
Uh-huh.
No, I think the reason why is pretty obvious is because it's all about the pregnancy. It's not about the fertility of the couple.
Uh-huh.
So then they tag the couples as infertile, which is even better. So more complex, and they never talk about it as the fertility clinic. It's the infertility clinic.
Right. Well,
so
that doesn't make sense. It should be the fertility.
It should be the fertility clinic, right? Yeah. I mean, to me, that makes sense. Just like the abortion center is the abortion center. It's not the not get pregnant clinic or something. It's very strange.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I just find that that whole attitude about, especially with it just look at it across the board. Look at the way entertainment is. You'll get a male butt in a movie almost all the time. Sometimes you don't even want to look.
Mm-hmm.
But very rarely do you get the full frontal nudity, such as watching a Borat movie. What
that
was that for?
Scene, the first time I saw that scene,
mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to bust a gut. I was laughing so freaking hard just because it was happening.
Well, it was one of those. Borat's another one. He's an eco. If you haven't lapped over to
gee,
I
never. I would have never figured that out.
I would imagine. And if you don't know what an eco is, I'll just give you a brief description. First 4 years of your life, your brain's developing. You go through four different ways of perceiving the world primarily. First year, you bond. We call that philosomatic, which means you bond with other humans, primarily to communicate. Second year, ontosomatic, which means you're talking to yourself, onto myself. Third year, eco, you get environmentally based, and you're very kind of in the air, baby. So you're not focused on them or you, just the vibe in the room. And so you're not really kind of self-conscious. You're like a little bit like in Dreamland a lot. And then you crash land into the fourth year of life when you start being able to organize time and space and stuff like that. And you get very exosomatic and you get outside the body and move into your head where you spend the next 20 years trying to figure out what happened the first three.
Uh-huh.
You know? So that's why that's the shorthand for it. You can go read about it ad nauseum on somaspace.org and on the blog we hate. dailyprofiler.net. So, where was I going? Help.
I don't know.
Okay.
This is what an eco sounds like when.
Borat. Yeah, Borat. Yeah, so.
See? There you go.
There you go.
Right back.
Just needed a cue.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why Borat, even when that movie came out, because it was a couple years ago, the reason why it's still shocking is because of the male nudity and the exaggerated. Homoerotica that took place in that movie. And the thing is that combines two things that this culture can't stand to talk about, which is male nudity, period, gay or straight, and, of course, homosexuality. Oh, my God. So I think that's actually going to be Michael Moore's next sacred cow in the culture is homophobia.
What's it going to be? Really?
All about homophobia, yeah. Yeah. And then that movie Milk is out now, and, of course, the gay rights people are taking a mixed view of his politics and first
uh-huh.
openly gay guy and so it, again, this is all about identity. Everything we talk about on the show is about something to do with your social identity. So when you think about erectile dysfunction, it is a major It's absolutely bar none. I mean, you could talk about heart disease. You could talk about cancer, like we did a couple weeks ago. And some of the other popular killers in the culture. When you talk about erectile dysfunction with any dude, it is a complete, just like that, when you see those Funniest Home Videos, it is a complete fold at the waist. And, ooh, because it literally pushes you outside of the boundaries of what you're comfortable calling yourself, because it's one of the things in the culture that once you pick a gender, so to speak, you sort of have it for the rest of your life. And when you don't feel man enough, because that's the new thing in the culture too, is everything has to be manning up. You're manning up. And then we had an era there, very briefly, kind of like this go, where the metrosexuals ruled the world, you know. So there's a lot of fuzziness when it comes to male identity, not so much with female identity. Oddly enough, you chicks have figured it out. And that's why the Cialis commercials crack me up.
They're really actually very entertaining.
I think they're funny. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, the warning that goes on in the commercials for the men are always about the mysterious four-hour erection.
Yes.
And what you do with that mysterious four-hour, you must call a medical professional. Are you kidding? If I was 16 and I had a four-hour erection, I'm not calling anybody. I might call every woman I know at that point. I don't know, but it's one of those funny sort of like unspoken things that when we're discussing the man, never discuss weaknesses, never discuss vulnerability, never discuss his feelings, and definitely never discuss his penis.
No.
Because he'll run up a tree.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and of course you can't discuss his colon either unless, you know, it's
well.
Poop talk, which is what, you know, we do here. But the thing is, it's like there's something about the female relationship with her junk, as it were, and the male relationship with his little treasure chest there. And the thing is that...
Wait a minute. Now, why does the woman have junk and the man
have
treasure chest?
Jumping ugly, eh? Ooh, 9-12, Val gets feisty. Because the male jewels, family jewels,
uh-huh,
are always positioned to be something that is rewarded. And the female womb is the sort of the satchel. And if you fail to bring me a son, you're no good to me, right?
Well, that's written in most religions. You
there
can
you
get
go.
Get rid of the bitch if she's barren. That's really supportive and loving.
That's right. Well, between that and arranged marriages and wars over pagan gods, we got it all figured out.
That's right. Fast and Furious still in many countries with the arranged marriage and the virginity at the time of marriage. I will never get, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing I don't live there.
Well, like I said, those are deeper tissues and deeper issues. But what we're dealing with here tonight is the surface of erectile dysfunction. Let me just give you the skinny, so to speak, on the condition, so that you understand it. I mean, most people when they get I hate to say that word, diagnosed with this, they think falsely that the problem is local. And unfortunately, just like with cancer. And depression, and everything else we talked about in the last couple of weeks, which we won't be talking about in the new year, by the way. I have a little surprise for you on that front. I'm going to take this morbid discussion off the Blog Talk Radio airwaves because it's boring the crap out of me. Anyway, 646-478-4847. Break the boredom. When you think about this condition, as far as the terms of way it's diagnosed, they look at it as something that's local. It's systemic. And 98, or maybe it's 96% of erectile dysfunction is brain-centered,
mm-hmm,
not penis-centered. Hmm.
Well,
so,
sometimes they're one and the same.
Well, most guys would say there's not much of a difference, yeah. But
mm-hmm,
it has to do with regulation, and it has to do with something that is completely undiscussed in the community of the ED world, Mr. Ed world. And the reason why I bring it up.
Did
is
you say bring it up?
Bring it up! Oh, wait. I had it all set up and then I changed my page. The reason why I bring it up. There you go. Is because When you look at the process from the brain down instead of from the penis up, so to speak, you start understanding why this is the result. Because just like in the stress response, the first thing that gets shut off, the first thing your system does when it's in self-preservation, when it perceives a threat, is it shuts off the reproductive system.
That's right.
It siphons them hormones to make the stress hormones to fight the enemy. Because you ain't screwing when you're fighting. Tough to do. Unless you're Italian. Then, because we associate the two as the same activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, why does this happen? What is the enemy? What is the unseen, unspoken enemy that the body is fighting in erectile dysfunction that is undiscussed? Any answers? Anyone out there in Blog Talk Radio Land?
Apparently,
have we opened the chat room?
No.
The nap room? Nobody is.
I'll open the nap room.
Yeah, open it up. Open up a window. Anyway, the guilty party that is causing all this ED, and especially is becoming prevalent now in the culture in the last 15 years or so, is gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And as my friend says,
you filthy criminies.
That's right. So, gravity. Freaking gravity is causing impotence. That's the only cause there ever was. Because if your posture is head over shoelaces, guess what? You're in stress with gravity. And gravity don't get tired. And gravity doesn't have a four-hour vacation. Okay? So that's why when you look at the stuff we put on about depression and some of the other things we discussed on the blog we hate, a little thing, ooh, should have said that, called the red light reflex, all right, the withdrawal reflex, the one that when you're walking along in the street and you go, snake, and your head goes forward, your body goes backward, that kind of jackknifes you, that reflex, that protects you, okay, also puts your flexor muscles into too much tension. And when they do that, they squeeze and constrict the arteries that go, ooh, to the body, and they push the blood to the arms and legs, away from the penis.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot get what they call tumulsus. I can't even say that word, tumulsus.
Yeah,
I'll put it on the blog. I'll put it on the blog, and I'll sound it out for you later. But basically, you can't get past that turgidity to get to the point of having an erection. Turgidity? Obscenity? You know? And what happens, of course, is that you condition yourself. It's sort of like the horse in Animal House. I will try harder. And so you become, in a very real sense, sort of in a tug of war, as it were, between brain and body to make the system work. And it becomes one of these situations really quickly, as you've all experienced.
Clap on, clap off, the clapper.
And after a while, you have to go through the psychological implications of that, because now the body has failed you. And any time the body has failed you, if you're a dude, you now have to go through all the things that would land you on Val's couch.
Yes.
You know, the whole seven veil dances of denial and anger and bargaining and all that Kubler Ross crap, because anything that makes a guy feel vulnerable or old or less masculine is verboten in the culture.
Yeah, that's bad. That's
verboten. And there's already enough complexes attached to this thing, you know, from Trump Street, from the teenage anxiety of premature ejaculation, which is a wonderful disease, all the way up to the pole. Yep, there I go up again. I gotta do this.
He's alive!
Yeah. All the way up to the point where you're dealing with things, like I said before, like infertility, STDs, which we'll get to somewhere down at the end of the alphabet with this. There's so much identity-based issues associated with the function of this particular part of the body. Like if it was a knee that had dysfunction, you would not be having so much stigma attached to this, do you? But when it comes to this, you do. And the reason why is that you're conditioned to think it's local. Okay? So the red light reflex is defeated, the menace of gravity. Why come there's no telethons for that? You know? Uh-huh. We're raising money to fight gravity. You know, they won't do that. You know,
did you say you were raising money?
We're raising money. Here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yep. There we go. Raising money again.
I was chatting with a guy online before, some 18-year-old from Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
who was completely freaked out about having a sex drive because, you know, you can't actually act on it. The whole premarital sex is a hell no there. And so he says, you know, sometimes he has to touch himself. So
what? Says, this is a chat conversation?
Yeah, and he says,
what kind of chat rooms are you in?
Just an IM, you know. And he says to me,
uh-huh.
he says to me that...
you converse a lot with that part of the world, by the way.
It makes, I know, he says it makes men weak. I said, what are you talking about? Now, I know that there's some ridiculous stuff in Asia about that.
What, do you only have so many orgasms and all that?
Yeah, you know, you only have so much sperm and stuff. So when I explained to him the biology, he was so excited.
Hey,
he ran offline.
He ran offline. He was so excited. What do you mean? He was excited in a good way?
He was excited that he wasn't damaging himself.
He was free to go have fun. I see.
Yes.
You freed another one.
And off he went.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, seeing as this is a topic that has a lot of fodder around it, I decided to pull up a little. There you go. Yes.
Oi, oi, oi.
This is the male disease.
A little George Carlin for us here.
Oh,
good.
The male disease includes the need to be in charge at all times. In charge, in control, in command. A real man sees himself as king of the hill, leader of the pack, captain of the ship. But all the while, in order to fit in and belong, he has to act like all the other men and do what they do so he'll be accepted and get a good job and a promotion and a raise and a Porsche and a wife. A wife who will immediately trade in the Porsche on a nice, sensible Dodge van with folding seats so they can be like all the other boring families. The poor fuck. The poor, stupid fuck. His manliness also requires that he refuse to go to a doctor or a hospital unless it can be demonstrated to him that he has, in fact, been clinically dead for 6 months. No sense going to the hospital, honey. I don't seem to be in a coma. Therefore, he must learn to ignore pain. It doesn't really hurt. Bleeding from 6 holes in the head doesn't really hurt. Just give me the remote and get me a beer and get the fuck out of here. Most men learn this stupid shit from their fathers. Fathers teach their sons not to cry. Don't let me hear you crying or I'll come up there and give you something to cry about. Great stuff, huh? All the problems in the world, repeat, all the problems in the world can be traced to what fathers do to their sons. So little boys learn to hide their feelings, and society likes that. Because that way, when they get to be 18, they'll be able to go overseas and kill strangers without feeling anything. And of course, that bargain includes a certain reluctant willingness to have their balls shot off. Honey, I have to go overseas and have my balls shot off, or else the rest of the guys will think I'm too afraid to go overseas and have my balls shot off. The poor fucks. The poor stupid fucks. And so, as a result of all this repression of feelings, the extent of the average man's emotional expression is the high five. Or sometimes when really deep feelings emerge, both hands, the high ten. This is raw emotion. And that's about all they're capable of. And they have Dad to thank. Thanks, Dad. But wait.
I can't stop laughing.
Wow.
We'll play some more of that in a little while.
He's the best EXO, man.
Oh, my God. What would we be like if he was alive during this whole election cycle? With the shoe throwing and the whole thing.
Oh, he would have loved it.
Yeah. See, George understood as an XO, because he got to that point, that seat in the semantic cinema, where you could just look at humanity and go, the poor stupid fucks. And he says it so XO, too. There's no, this is total
no
flatness.
Yep.
It's perfect. Yeah, we'll play some more of that. I got about 2-3 minutes of that, but I wanted to see if we got anybody to react to what we're doing so far. I mean, I think over to say, no, of course nobody. In addressing this demon gravity, you know, it really starts from when you learn how to walk or stand, right, and all the way up to the point when you get to middle age, where you develop a lot of habits that are not posturally, you know, so about politically correct and posturally correct.
Yeah, you should see the way I'm sitting right now. You'd should.
Yeah, I'll bet. You're sitting in typical eco sketch the outline around you on the street pose.
Pretty much.
And so what happens is the weakest part of the system is the pelvic bowl, because that's the part that has to have to deal with the most swishy stuff, right? And then you have the rib cage, right? Got the heart in there, lungs in there, got to protect that. Then you have the cranial vault, you know? They name these things according to their function as the way the whole body works, right? So you have this big pelvic bowl with all this guts sitting around it, pushing down on a teeny little prostate, about the size of a plum down there, right? If it's healthy, maybe like a walnut, actually. And what happens is that as the years go passing by, and you go from adolescence to early adulthood to middle age, and you're following the male disease according to George's plan there, there's a lot of ignoring of early warning signs that gravity is taking over. The paunch, otherwise known as the meat skirt, is a big indicator. And most of the dudes that get diagnosed with ED had what first? High blood pressure. And where did Viagra come from? Ooh, kind of like the baldness drug, right? Trying to treat hypertension. And what happens if you take that stupid thing and you get the blue light in the eyes? You go freaking blind over it. So in an effort to, again, reroute the blood that's going into the arms and legs because the demon gravity is creating the invisible enemy that the body is trying to fight by tensing up the arms and legs. If you do not fall on your face, you have to make a choice, men, a choice. Do I fall or do I fight? And most of the middle-aged men I know, being one of them, we choose to fight. And fight we do. And then, of course, when it comes time for affection, the warrior man cannot reroute the blood in time because now all those things he talked about comes flooding to the surface, literally. And our little performer in us, in our head, says, I cannot go on. I have stage fright. I have rerouted the blood. It's almost like mailing a letter and the zip code is wrong. And
yep.
And it's return to sender. And that scene in the Woody Allen movie when Tony Randall is in the brain. You know that movie?
No, I can't.
Everything you always want to know about sex?
No.
Oh, God. You got to YouTube this. I got to find it while we're talking because it is hilarious. It's about a guy basically trying to get over premature ejaculation. And basically you got several characters playing different organs, you know. I forget who the adrenals are and stuff like that. And Tony Randall's in the command center in the brain, and he's trying to talk the guy through it and stuff, like an air traffic controller. Hilarious. And it's exactly what goes on inside a guy's mind when his sexual proclivity is not hitting on all cylinders, because there's so much emphasis on performance on the male side. Women, on the other hand, literally, they have the other issue. They can't get pregnant. Right, that's a big issue when they're young, and then as they get older, the female issue is much more about, you know, making sure they have certain conditions met. You know, it's like a setting. It's almost like a picnic. I'm going to show up for sex. I will bring the lubrication. I will bring the. It's like a whole bunch of equipment has to go, and it's more about receiving than giving for the woman. In the beginning, it's more about giving. Oh, forget it. So we're getting into some dark corners here.
Ding.
9:28. And that's why I'm saying the condition of erectile dysfunction is really a tip of the iceberg of a bigger issue of the identity change that goes on in midlife. Because as the women who go through a very much ballyhooed perimenopause and then a menopause and then a postmenopause, entire 20-year odyssey, I think, that preceded 20 years of PMS. So your hormones have way better PR than men. Men have like two hormones, right? We have basically the one that causes us to kill and the one that causes us to screw. That's it. And watch football. I don't know. So, but andropause and menopause are basically the same processes as far as symptoms go.
Mm-hmm.
But when men get irritable and sensitive and uptight, who do they talk to? They tell their buddy?
No one.
They internalize. And that's why hypertension, because if it all goes back to the number one muscle, the chief, the Bruce Springsteen of the myocardium. The heart says, I got to keep this sucker alive for another 30, 40 years. I'm going to reroute the circulation because you know what? The first thing that goes in the stress response is everything below the belt. Because it doesn't matter. I've already reproduced. I've already sown my seed. I have to start bringing it in for a landing, Wilbur. So what happens is that the system starts to fight itself on its own biological agenda because, of course, the man, usually in middle age, has a little thing going on in the background, a little green gremlin that says, "You're never going to get old. Get another chick." And they go shopping. And that middle-aged crazy guy takes over, and here he is.
I'm a pirate!
Isn't that a great one?
Yes.
Yes,
and
I told you.
Yes, there you go. So the guy, again, he chooses to fight. He fights everything. He fights gravity. He fights his own aging process. He fights his identity. And, of course, he loses the battle, which takes place in the pants.
That's right.
So, of course, what
the
happens?
Battle of the pants.
Yeah, the battle of the pants. And so what happens is he throws a bunch of pills in his body, thinking that that's gonna bypass that. And unfortunately, it works in the short run, but what does it teach the body? It teaches the body a very invaluable lesson. Don't rely on Merck for your long-term health.
Right.
Because what are we now, 10 or 15 years into Prozac, maybe 20?
Yes.
With chronic use? And we've had how many people go deeper into depression? And if we talk to David Goodman, who's been on the show a couple of times, melt their brains down?
Not for nothing, but if I'm depressed and then I take an antidepressant, which then takes my ability to have an orgasm away, I'm really going to be depressed. Hello?
Yes.
Did they think of that ahead of time?
No, because again,
Freaking idiot.
Thing that goes in a stress response is that. That's the other side of the coin. The man who has the erectile dysfunction is depressed because of that, and then he takes the anti-psychotic stuff, you know, the pharmaceutical stuff for that, and of course now the side effect of that is erectile dysfunction.
Right. You have a party going on over there, don't you?
Yes, it's a Star Wars jamboree tonight.
I hear it.
Here at Soma Space. Well, we have evening hours here, as you know.
Yes.
We're very busy from midnight to 6. You want to stop by. If you're a trucker on 95.
It's very true, but bring a snack.
Yeah, bring me some food. So it's like I said, the thing I want to get to about ED is that ED is just one horse in a big barn here. You've got a lot of things. And again, when we were talking about it 20 years ago, 30 years ago, before all these drugs hit the market, what was the solution to that condition back then? It was to my couch.
Oh, that, yeah, well, yeah.
They would talk it out. No, that every problem a man had that was associated with his physical well-being from 35 to the grave, they pointed you to therapy. And then they gave you lithium, of course, back in the 70s and led the other drugs. So it's almost like there's a strategy here. And you know, my old driving school instructor always told me, turn in the direction of the skid and you'll be okay. And what I get from discussing this even tangentially, just talking about posture, is that dudes don't like to feel weak. And one of the tools in my trade is muscle testing. You know, I used to use it a lot more than I do now. But when you show somebody that a muscle is not a muscle that you think it is. It's not this piece of meat that contracts and relaxes like independently of the rest of the system. And that just simply turning in the direction of where your conflicts are. I love doing that to these big, strong guys. Ooh, you get them out there with their arms like a little bit like a reverse V, you know, like they land in a plane. And you say, okay, face the direction where you work. Bip. And their arms go weak. Face the direction where you live. Bip. And the arms go weak. Face the direction of where you go when you have fun with your friends. Bip. Everything's strong. And they don't realize that the memory is not just something that occurs in time. It also occurs in space. And that's why when it comes to the penis, that is the ultimate spatial medicine. And that's why when you deal with the pelvis of most men, because of the aforementioned meat skirt, is inflection.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Joining us late, 646-478-4847.
If you'd like to discuss your meat skirt.
If you'd like to discuss your meat skirt and other things related to this, is that when you're dealing with that, again, you're dealing with vulnerability, and most guys do because of that issue, is they don't realize that the pear-shaped body is another indication of a heart problem. And we don't address it that way. We address it as weight loss and get the colon going and take it as a local, see? And what I get over and over again in any type of discussion with a middle-aged man, being one of them, being part of the club, is that the system has to, the person has to sort of understand that their environment and them are like a seesaw. And when they try to separate themselves, most guys try to exo. They try to separate themselves and stay in the head, get very analytical, very logical, like George Carlin was talking about. And they want proof. They want external proof. And when you talk about their feelings, you talk about their emotions, you talk about things that go on underneath the canopy of the skin, they get really quiet about it because that means, of course, oh, my God, I need help. And if I need help, I'm not a man. It never stops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But women, on the other hand, weakness is rewarded. To a certain extent, because it's looked at as being very feminine, and of course caregiving and all that other you know stereotypical stuff. So a woman takes much more care of her body in middle age because they are not allowed to fail, to go through the change. Everyone knows it's coming. It's almost like high school graduation. You know when you're 12, you have a sweet 16, then you have a graduation party, you get a car, and you go to college. Women know when they hit like 38, 40 years old that, okay, you know, if last call for having kids, and then it's pretty much it's time for the perimenopause, and then they're pretty soon slapping on some yam cream on their legs, and they're pulling out hairs out of their face, and they're starting to, you know, look for some darker beers to drink, and after that it's pretty much moo-moos. So it's like time for the moo-moo. Is this the best scene in the movie? I think it is. Got to play this. See if I can find it. Yeah, well, Woody Allen is a sperm, by the way, in this.
Of course, he is.
Yeah, this is. I'll play a minute or two of this. Tony Randall.
Well, that's too loud.
Burt Reynolds, handing it.
Scrap the left leg. The leg has been scratched. That's Joe coming in on 4-1. Prepare response for incoming Joe.
Joke response 18.2.
Smile, please.
He's smiling.
Brain stomach.
Not like the bread. Over.
Food coming down.
What kind?
Fettuccine.
Jesus Christ. Italian food coming down.
Stomach proceeding with breakdown of fettuccine.
This is Mission Control. Please stand by for systems check.
Well, what do you think?
No, thanks.
Think we're going to have intercourse tonight? I'm very optimistic. And dinner, it is very beautiful. Have you seen her?
No, not a chance. This is fantastic. I've been going crazy.
She's lovely. You should take a look. Brain to eyes. Come in.
Eyes to brain. Over.
Focus on the dinner date. I want to check out something, please.
Do you want the whole body?
Yes, please.
Hey.
Would be a shame to lose this one.
Yeah. Wow.
Any indication yet?
Brain to ears. Can you throw some voice at me?
Yes, for me, Norman Mailer has exactly that same sort of relevance, that affirmative-negative duality that only Proust or Flaubert could achieve.
Don't know if we're going to make it or not. Doesn't look too good.
I'm a graduate of New York University.
We're going to make it.
I'm worried.
Wow. All right, I'll put the rest of that on the blog we hate because it's just too funny for words to watch the whole scene unfold. But the whole point is that there's an internal dialogue, a physiological dialogue that's ongoing that is always trying to match enhance or match suppress what the intention of the individual is. And like I said, one of the classic cases I've ever had with this situation was a dude around 60 who was experiencing operating difficulties, and he was in Anto, which makes it even worse.
Uh-huh.
And for him. And so, you know, here's his body letting him down, and Anto's have a very low threshold for pain or any kind of discomfort that's physical, because, of course, that's all they experience is themselves, primarily. And so, you know, he's looking for the Jesus adjustment for me, behavioral chiropractor extraordinaire. And so I skipped into the room and said, hello! And he's sitting there, and he, for about three visits, he didn't tell me what his problem was. It was his prostate, it was his low back, it was this, it was that. Finally, it was that, you know. And so I said, oh, that's easy. He said, what? I said, yeah. I said, think about a pink elephant, or don't think about a pink elephant, as it were. And there it was, right? So I said, the problem is that you're trying to force the system to do something it doesn't want to do instead of trying to force the system of what it wants to do. So it's like, okay, you're in bed, and you're trying to achieve the direction the way you've been trying, and it's straight uphill, straight up the Matterhorn, right? And I get that, right? Because you have all this interference, all these things we talked about, right? But if you try the alternate way, which, because in the past, the memory is still in the tissues, right? It's another couple of rows down the library, but it's in there. Because in the present, operating difficulties. But in the past, smooth sailing.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is, because he's with his wife of, I don't know, 40 years or whatever, I said, is just tell yourself that you're not here now, you're there then. And then once you're there then, you say, resist myself. I resist myself. So if you, at the age of 25, try to, with all your might, to not achieve an erection, you would fail.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's nodding his head, as an Anto will, when they agree and they certify your statements as truth. And I anchored him, boop, and using the little NLP on it. I actually clapped in front of his nose. And I got a nice voicemail a couple days later, because he's kind of a Brigadier General kind of voice, you know, kind of like Elaine's father on Seinfeld, you know, master of the house, kind of like that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Doc, this is, just want you to know, I couldn't resist myself. Thank you very much. You know. And it was like, you know,
happy
trail. Eureka. Well, it was eureka, because most people try to focus on going from the present to the future, when actually it works from the future to the present. Intention goes from the future to the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the past is like basically a bunch of wrapped fish. And you could wrap fish and put your trophy case up and have all your highlights. You could have all your demons in there. And that's what people get, you know, termites of the mind. They think about all the things that didn't work, and they focus on them, and they dissect them, and they spread them out, and they do a Dexter on them, and they put them in little slides, and they go, oh, my God, I have all these details about all the things I did that didn't work.
That sounds familiar.
Hmm, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And upon further review, this further review. That's all you get. And like I said, that to me is the biggest problem with this particular allopathic ailment, because it connects to the whole male identity, the whole history of that male. And if they're not around an environment that understands that, it exacerbates it. So if you're around, say, an Anto woman, whoa, gosh, it's like throw up in my mouth. Oh, my God. That was horrible.
I understand.
Yeah, well, that was just out of it. See, your body's listening, folks. You're not only going to get support, you're going to get the boos. They're going to come out. The boo birds are going to come out because they didn't get what they wanted. All right, back to George for a couple of minutes here.
After all, they've introduced their sons to the wonderful world of men, the male subcultures, the really tough guy masculine he-man stuff. No whips, no pussies, no softies. There are five deadly male subcultures, and they all overlap. The car and machinery culture, the police and military culture, the outdoors and gun culture, the sports and competition culture, and the drug and alcohol culture. And as a bonus, I'm going to throw in one more. The let's go get some pussy and beat the shit out of queers culture.
Oh,
as I say,
God.
They all overlap. Many men belong to all six. This male universe is, of course, detectable by analyzing its combustible chemical formula. Gasoline, gunpowder, alcohol, and adrenaline. A chemistry rendered even more lethal by that ever-present, ever-delightful accelerant, testosterone. Talk about substance abuse? If it's chemical dependency you're interested in, you might want to look into testosterone. Testosterone! The most lethal substance on Earth. And it does not come from a laboratory. It
comes from the scrotum. A scrotum located, interestingly enough, not far from the asshole. The thing. And as it happens, all these male subcultures share a particular set of features. Homophobia, coupled with an oddly ironic, complete childlike trust in male authority. Men are attracted to powerful men. They also share a strong fear and dislike of women, and this in spite of a pathological obsession with pussy. Testosterone! So why are men like this? I think the overriding problem for men is that in life's main event, reproduction, they're left out. Women do all the work. What do men contribute? Generally, they're just looking for a quick parking space for some sperm. A couple of hits of hot jism and the volume on the TV goes right back up. It's my belief that most of these flawed male chromosomes should not be allowed to go forward for even one more unfortunate generation. But such is biology. And so, excluded as they are from reproduction, men must find other ways to feel useful and worthwhile. As a result, they measure themselves by the size of their guns, the size of their cars, the size of their dicks, and the size of their wallets. All contests that no man can win consistently. And let me tell you why all this happened. Because women are the source of all human life. The first human being came from the belly of a female. And all human fetuses begin as females. The brain itself is basically female until hormones act on it to make it structurally male. So in reality, all men are modified females. Where do you think those nipples came from, guys? You're an afterthought. Maybe that's what's bothering you. Is that what's on your mind, Bunky? That would explain the hostility. Women got the good job, men got the shitty one. Females create life, males end it. War, crime, violence are primarily male franchises. Man shit. It's nature's supreme joke. Deep in the womb, men start out as the good thing and wind up as the crappy thing. Not all men. Just enough. Just enough to fuck things up. And the dumbest part of it all is that not only do men accept all this shit, half of it they do to themselves. By the way, I'm not letting women completely off the hook. After all, the one part of the lower anatomy that is the same in both sexes is the asshole. But women who are assholes aren't called that. They're named for a different part of their lower anatomy. They're called cunts. Isn't it nice that cunts and assholes are next door neighbors?
Oh, 646.
Oh, my God. He's the best, man.
478-447. Merry Christmas.
He is. Wow. God.
Now, if you heard that in the waiting room at the infertility clinic, you might leave. You might say, you know what? This is all a scam.
Yeah.
Oh, because like I told you before, the enemy's all over you. It's gravity. So, you know, if you practice some little somatics, maybe little simples over at summerspace.org, and you were breathing and moving in harmony with the universe, the female universe, the giving universe, the living universe, not the one that's dying in your scrotum, as he says. Jeez. You would experience a little bit of distance between you and your dysfunction. Because most guys look at anything that goes wrong as somebody else's problem. And, you know, then they come in with tools and the belts and everything else and, the Home Depot caravan to fix it. Instead of the more evolved position to free it. You must free yourself from erectile dysfunction, not fix it, just like cancer. And the thing is that the whole organism is experiencing the response. And the only reason you're having that response, again, is because you have missed the boat. And there's a lot of things about perceived threat that we talk about on this show that I think gets by the boards. Because if anyone's out, is anybody there, anyone listening, the whole thing about somatics is that you're talking fundamentally about a relationship, which is primarily a female topic. Right?
Uh-huh.
And relationships have to have openness. So if you're a closed soma and you're locked in your primary domain and you're sitting there in the same chair you chose when you were two and you haven't tried out the other three chairs, the other three perspectives, the other three ways of framing the world, you're not going to be adopting a lot of different signatures of other shapes very easily. So your social brain will suffer from starvation, so to speak, and then you're stuck in the biological brain that has a program and so shuts you off in andropause. And so it becomes more difficult to have an erection because it's more important to keep your heart beating.
I would say so.
Yeah, in the grand scheme. So, of course, if you already have hypertension, you already have a meat skirt, you already have your head over your shoelaces, you already have pre-diabetic conditions, you already have a stressful lifestyle, the least, hate to say it, the least of your problems is ED.
Uh-huh.
Least, because that's your body trying to preserve energy, because if you go through the full cycle of having sex, it might be the last thing you do on the planet Earth.
It's happened.
Yes. It actually, grand scheme of things, if you could just, throw out a blank piece of paper and put it in a box and open it when you're 65 or 70, that might be an option.
Mm-hmm.
Good way to go, right?
Sure.
Die well, going, coming, my going, whatever it's called. yeah. So, like I said, that's the thing I think that most people don't want to look at. I forget the name of the book now. Oh, it's going to bug me. Oh, good stocking stuff. It's all about disease. And it's got a really sick green hospital cover on it, too. Oh, it's in Wavelength somewhere. I'll never find it.
Well, you'll have to post it later.
Blog we hate. Yeah, I have to put it on the blog. Unless it comes to me in the next couple of minutes. But it's all about Survival of the Sickest is the name of the book. There you go. Survival of the Sickest.
Uh-huh. See, there you go.
Right. There you go. See, I always keep that stuff handy in case I'm doing a show that nobody listens to. And in Survival of the Sickest, they talk about how do these chronic diseases, chronic implying over time, how do these chronic diseases, get propagated through the species generation after generation? It can't all be genetics. It can't all be lifestyle, right? No, there's a biological reason, and it has to do with your relationship to your environment. So diabetes was a disease process that was born of people trying to conserve their heat in their body. In the northern regions where they were exposed to harsh winters. So it's a way to modify your sugar metabolism to keep the body heat maintained so that your organs would be preserved through the winter. And, of course, same thing with obesity, right, for starvation, right? Body would slow down the metabolism, keep the fat on because there wasn't going to be a lot of food because things were dying off in the wintertime and didn't have any food. So very similar to bears who hibernate, and, we mammals did the same thing. We did the same thing. But we culturally conditioned ourselves to maintain it when the conditions changed. So now we have an abundance. We can control our thermal environment. We can control the intake of our food. We still have the biological glitch in us that says, hey, it's winter time, slow down the metabolism, yada, yada, yada. And that's why a lot of people wake up in January and go, my pants don't fit, Ma. Because our system is powering down. And now we have the solstice coming up on Sunday, and then the days start getting a little longer, we have a little more light, the system starts speeding up all the way to Groundhog Day, when the seedlings start journeying their way to the surface.
Looking forward to that.
Yes. And, pretty soon, 6 more weeks of winter, and then you get through your equinox in March, and presto changeo, we change the clocks, and here comes the bugs, and here comes the allergies, and we're back in the summer, and we're all complaining about the humidity again. So, that rhythm is what the somatic method that I've been able to cobble together is all about aligning you with. And everything you do in the meantime should be supporting that rhythm rather than pushing it away, denying it, or invalidating it, or separating yourself from it, because it's relentless. I last week we played a little Fiddler on the Roof, sunrise, sunset. This ebb and flow ain't stopping. And you have to figure out why your system is putting itself at odds with that and align yourself with that the way life in general works, and then your life in particular will be supported by that. When your life in particular is kind of 90 degrees to life in general, you're screwed, literally. And that's why I every time I do this kind of a show or we talk about all these things, even when we had guests on and stuff, during the Naked Soma days, I was always just—I'm like a dog. It looks at you funny and it turns its head sideways.
Mm-hmm.
I just never understood why the other half of the equation, the environmental surroundings, the biological terrain you're living on, was never connected to the person living in it. It'd be like talking about a fish living in an aquarium and then saying, I'm going to examine this fish independent of the quality of the water and the food I put in the tank and, you know, everything else and the light and all that stuff. Uh-huh. I'm just going to look at this fish like it's dead. And that's what we do a lot with conditions like this. We look, you know, especially the big killers, the heart disease and things like that. We look at them as, oh, it must be coming from those things we can't see, like genes, or it must be coming from, you know, from some behavior. All those things just turn the woofer and the tweeter. They just amplify what's already going on. And now once it's on the surface, will you? It's like it's the threshold. Will you pay attention to it now? And then once you've addressed it, how can you support aligning yourself again? Like I said before, what are you going to do to support it in the meantime? This is where our stuff comes in at TSM, the Somatic Method, because we give you the calendar, damn it. We give you the freaking map. And it says, do this, and you will have at least a fighting chance, Sapien.
Right, that's right. It's not
to get
difficult.
A little coherence. And we should do that.
It's really simple.
Yes. Oh, we need a little coherence right this very minute. Hey, yada-da. I've said that in my head.
Freaking evil.
We could do that. We could just make all the Christmas songs into coherence.
That's it. We've become Albert Ellis.
Mm-hmm. Albert Ellis?
Oh, all the songs that he did? He made us sing about masturbating.
I see.
Yeah. He has a song for every single thing he ever talked about, and he makes us sing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mhm.
Well, we'll wind it down here. Love Charlie Brown. There we go. So, it's been a really quick year, in a way. Kind of like root canal.
Mm-hmm.
Just lean back and enjoy it. 2008. Ouch, babe. That's all I can say about that year. The next 2 weeks, we're going to be partaking of the family activities and those things like that there. And we'll be...
Holy Testicle Tuesday!
Exactly. And we will be replaying a highlight reel of our Naked Soma days from earlier this year. So you'll get... the best of the first half of the year next week on Christmas Eve, and the best of the second half of the year on New Year's Eve. And if you're listening to Somatime at 9 o'clock on New Year's Eve,
oh, man.
God bless you. But it'll be there for you, archived in perpetuity in hyperspace and Soma space and all kinds of other spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, you know, we're going to be working our little elves asses off while you're gone, and... we'll come back next Wednesday in January. I think it's the 7th or something.
Oh, that's my sister's birthday.
Well, there you go. More reason to listen.
Yeah, it is the 7th.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be back with that. And again, we're going to be doing a lot of things to kind of change the format of the show. We really want to start answering questions during this hour so that we can get you guys interested in the method, interested in using it in your life. And so we're going to be... doing a lot of work on both somaspace.org and the blog we hate, the dailyprofiler.net, and also the blog we like, blogsoma.net, because we just keep making all kinds of free stuff, and you guys don't listen or watch or learn, and it's a wonderful thing. It really is.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I don't know where we are here, but...
we got a minute.
Oh, good.
So, what do you want for Christmas, little boy?
What do I want for Christmas?
Yeah.
Silence.
Wow.
Utter and complete quiet.
Would that ever happen?
Well, if I just, you know, go in a room and just, you know, put my hands on my ears, maybe, yeah.
I have some really good earplugs for that. Yeah. I have to put them in at night sometimes because the cat sits by the door and screams and meows, and I can't stand that, so I put them in. Yeah.
Well, we're going to play out here with a little advice from a woman who's going to be performing at the inaugural dance next month. All right, dudes, we will see you guys in the new year. And until then, travel light to the darkness.
Bye-bye.
Shakira, Shakira. Oh, baby, when you talk like that. baby, this is perfection.